Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
Today's program was brought to you by Fiji Water and Patina Events at Brooklyn Botanic Garden, an idyllic location for weddings, corporate events, and parties of any style. Visit us at patinaevents.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
When you're starting a startup, feedback, iterations, and pivoting is all a part of the story. But when do you know when it's time to make the big pivot? Stay tuned on this episode of Tech Bites. Hello, hello, Heritage Radio Network listeners tuning in from 150 countries around the world, about a million listens a month. What are they all listening to? Well, they're listening to about 35 live shows a week, including this one, Tech Bites, the weekly show where we talk to innovators and influencers in the food tech space. And today, that innovator is Megan Corot, who is the CEO and founder of a company called Tuckerbox. If you are a faithful, diehard listener, you will remember the sound of her voice from episode 99 last year, where we had a roundtable panel of women CEOs and founders in the food tech space. It's a great episode. And, you know, we like to follow the stories of the people we have on the show. And so this is going to be our second installment with Megan, talking about what's going on with her company now. But before we do that, we're going to start the episode like we start every episode, going around the shipping container, talking about apps. Apps we love, old favorites, new ones we've discovered. And to Megan, whose Tuckerbox is kind of an app, I will remind her that the only rule is that you cannot talk about an app that you own, created, or are invested in. Which I say that every time, and some people do anyway. Do you have an app that you like right now that you're using a lot?
Oh my gosh. I am loving the HQ app. The trivia game happens at 3 o'clock and 9 o'clock every day. And you have 10 seconds to answer various trivia questions. There's 12 of them. And if you get all 12, then you win the jackpot. It's usually $2,500.
Wow. How many people are playing?
Usually at night, it's more, so it's like close to a million. Mm-hmm. And during the day, it's like 500,000.
So you stop, drop, and play HQ.
Yeah.
You're not the first person to mention it on the show, so
really?
It must be something that's trending.
It is.
Although I find myself trying to move away from my phone instead of moving towards my phone. I feel like this would sort of even... Does it create like a little anxiety and excitement when the time's coming up, or do you have an alarm that goes off, or does it message you? Or
It messages you, yeah. And it's just a good break, I think, too, in the day.
Yeah.
So, and it's really fun because all of my friends are playing as well too. So,
have any of your friends won yet? Have you won yet?
No. Okay. You usually get knocked out by like 4 or 5. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I mean, it's like Lotto. You can't win it if you're not in it, so.
Totally.
Next up, we have David Tadashore, who is our engineer and the Heritage Radio Network studio manager.
That's me.
How are you?
I'm good. How about you?
I'm pretty good. Do you have an app for us that you like right now?
Yeah. So I'm the last person who would ever say anything nice about healthcare in this country, but an app that I used recently was for the One Medical Group. It's like a association of doctors' offices, I guess, in New York and other cities. And the app is just really user-friendly and easy to use to book appointments, to upload your insurance information, all that. So where something would normally be, you know, something that would normally be a kind of a headache and a pain to deal with was made a little easier by this app.
Oh, that's good. Are you worried about, you're not worried about having your information swimming around electronically?
I mean,
I suppose everything
kind of is anyway, so
yeah. True.
It's all out there.
It is all out there. And healthcare and the health industry is supposed to be one category where tech is supposed to be making big strides of improving life and systems and admin. I don't know that that's happened yet, though.
Yeah, sounds good.
Yeah, they make great commercials.
Yeah.
Well, my app today is called Croissant, and I'm partially enthralled with it just because I really like the icon. It's a illustration of a person, and the top of their head is a croissant. They're like wearing a giant croissant as a hat. It looks maybe a little like Napoleon-esque.
Love it.
It's adorable. Croissant is the class pass for co-working space where you sign up, you pay a monthly fee, and then you can, you know, look at real time. I need an office space desk now, and it will show you what's available. And, you know, there are places like 100 Bogart, which is where Heritage Radio Network HQ is. It's down the street from the studio. They're also a sponsor and a supporter. We have events there every now and again. They're one of the great companies that are included. So if you're into the co-working space, but you don't want to maybe commit to a specific spot because you roam around a lot, and maybe you're tired of the coffee shop thing.
Yes.
Croissant might be something interesting for you. It's not really food tech. I got excited when I first heard about it because I thought it might be a potential guest. But it's just a food name.
Right.
I'm not sure why it's named Croissant.
I was just thinking, why did they name it
Croissant? I don't know. The little logo is great, though.
Mm-hmm.
I love it.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. So, Megan and her company, Tuckerbox. I want to thank her at the very beginning of the show for coming on, because she's going to talk about her big pivot with her company. And for those of you who are not really into the startup entrepreneur lingo, pivot means a lot of different things. You know, the startup industry is famous for rapidly acquiring feedback and information about their product and service, taking all that information and then making adjustments and rolling out new things and new versions and making constant iterations to move the product forward. So feedback is always good. Sometimes feedback is really extreme from the original product, and people make a big pivot and they change the idea of what the company is, or maybe exactly how it's going to work or what it does. But sometimes the pivot is maybe stopping your startup, which is not an easy decision to make, and it's a very fine line between all the different types of pivoting. But it's also becoming increasingly one of the more important storylines in the startup world. I was back listening to episode 99, Women CEOs, with Megan, and the end of the show, interestingly enough, we talk a lot about transparency, and we talk a lot about sharing successes as well as sharing failures to learn from, for everyone to learn from. And you had very interesting comments about talking about the courage of failure.
Yeah.
How, you know, when you have that, really, when you fail and you share that information, the courage of failure, the wherewithal to keep going and moving forward, and sort of, you know, the degrees of, you know, moments of courage and strength to sort of take all this information and move forward and share it with people. So I thought that was just such an interesting
thing to
be
listening
to.
Again.
I was listening to it on the L train on my way out here. So that episode was last summer.
Yes.
And last summer, 2017, you were in the throes of actually your first beta project.
That's right, yes. So Tuckerbox was partnered with Equinox for their summer camp programs. And so we were able to test all of the meals and recipes on 80 kids, delivering to three different locations, and just getting a ton of feedback in real time. So that was really, really incredible.
And at that moment when you were talking about the courage of failure, you probably weren't thinking about...
No, because...
Being in this space 6 months later.
No, I don't know what my expectation was for the next 6 months at that point, but I definitely thought it would look a little different than it does today.
This is probably a good time to take a quick look back and have Megan walk us through the history of Tuckerbox. And the fascinating thing, well, there's a lot of fascinating things about Megan's story, but one of the things that really struck me is that the Tuckerbox journey from beginning to this end point, not perhaps final end, but the mm-hmm. end of this chapter, you had an extremely successful startup from beginning to end. And, you know, why don't you walk us through some of the different things? But the highlights are, you had your investments, you were a part of a great accelerator and all those kinds of things. So,
right. Yeah, sure. So, so my background is in creative advertising, and I'm a design founder. So I founded Tuckerbox in September of 2015, and it was my side hustle for about 6 months. So I was working in an agency all day and then doing Tuckerbox at night. And I had a great team of advisors and mentors around Tuckerbox at that time. And
tell us what Tuckerbox is.
Yeah, that's a great place to start. Tuckerbox is the first farm to lunchbox meal delivery and iOS app for kids. So it's all about giving kids autonomy over their food choices and creating a healthier generation through food and technology.
Your area of specialty is the design and the tech and that piece of it.
Yeah, I was sort of like CEO, but CMO, like creative director, I guess.
And what was it about the children's food space mm-hmm. that draw you in?
Well, growing up, I took a packed lunch every day from home, and I didn't exactly learn healthy eating habits like most kids in the 90s who took a packed lunch. It was a lot of, peanut butter and jelly and yogurts and things like that. And so fast forward, I was working on a lot of different products, and one of them was Saqqara Life, which is a meal delivery that was kind of one of the first meal deliveries that, and they're all about like food and fashion and the intersection of those things. But anyway, I just saw that, while women were cleansing their bodies and doing these things in their 30s, and I was one of them, I was like working in like a really busy career, didn't really have time, but I didn't learn, the healthy eating habits in my childhood to feed myself well as an adult. So Tuckerbox was all about, starting conversations at the school lunch table when it matters most, and kind of learning all about food in a really fun and engaging way.
So you realized that some of the challenges that you had as an adult and wanting to fix your own sort of personal nutrition space, your issue probably would have been best solved 10 or 15,
absolutely,
20 years earlier.
Yep.
So interestingly, you followed a lot of the entrepreneurial spirit in that, you're fixing a problem you have. It's just interesting that fixing the problem that you have actually wouldn't necessarily benefit you directly.
Right, precisely, yeah.
Which is interesting also, and very much more altruistic in terms of actually fixing the problem, not just for yourself.
Yeah, well, I think that being a design founder helped me in that way because I'm a builder. So I just got right into building the app,
So you build an app for kids, and if you are listening along and you're in front of a computer, you can go to Tuckerbox, TuckerBox.com, and take a look at it. It's really great and visually a lot of fun and clear and fresh. So you design the app, you design the website and the idea. This is 2015.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What next?
So I got into Google's incubator program.
That's amazing.
Yes. And from there, really, it was kind of like getting an MBA in 30 weeks. It was extremely academic and really a difficult program. But, you know, like I said, I was building things, but I had no idea how to be a startup founder, how to raise money, how to talk to investors, how to build out a team, those kind of things. So that was just an incredible journey. And
how did you get into that?
So I had an advisor who was an entrepreneur in residence for their first cohort. And so she knew the program very well. And she encouraged me. I'm very active in Lesbians Who Tech. And she also is big in that scene. And so she encouraged me to apply. And it kind of went from there. Yeah.
That's an amazing accelerator to be a part of.
Thank you. Yeah, it was really incredible.
So you go through the Google MBA Tech Accelerator Startup Program.
Yes.
And then what next?
I met my co-founder kind of when we started that program. And from there, we took on our executive chef and we started recipe development sort of from an R&D standpoint, but also with taste tests and things like that. And then we had our nutrition partners join. And so we were testing all of our recipes sort of on the food side of things. And then we won the New York App Idea Awards. So I had some funding to actually develop the app.
Another great milestone.
Yeah. So that was really, really incredible. So we partnered with Roco Labs and began developing the app. And from there, we, you know, fast forward, we partnered with Equinox. So that was like the next big break. Also, we're pitching all over the country. So won a couple of other pitch competitions, notably the NGLCC pitch competition in Vegas. And so that was a little more funding.
And you also did some family funding and things like that also, correct?
Yeah, that's right. So that was a ton of work as well. We did an Indiegogo campaign and, you know, raised a friends and family round out of that. Yeah.
So you're winning pitch contests, you're winning app contests, you're mm-hmm. winning funding,
yeah.
you're self-funding. You came out of the Google program and you're staffed up testing.
Yeah, so I was full-time on Tuckerbox at that point and was supporting myself by doing freelance on the side, but, you know, it was difficult.
So Equinox, what was the premise around the test with Equinox then?
Yeah, so the premise was, well, it was a little different than the business model because, you know, we weren't delivering a week worth of meals, which is what, you know, the big idea was.
The big idea was you have the app, kids have the app themselves.
Right.
They
so much
pick
like
their own mm-hmm. lunches, and then the lunches get delivered once a week.
Yeah,
to their
so five
residents.
Fully prepared meals, you know, no prep for parents would arrive on Sunday to the parents' home. And so they just put it in the refrigerator, and the kids, you know, grab one and head to school.
Okay. So the Equinox program was a little bit different. It had a lot of kids.
Yeah. So that was really great. But one thing we didn't realize was that a lot of the kids were a lot younger. So the average age was like 3-4 years old. And, you know, Tuckerbox was designed with a focus on elementary school kids. So from 5 to 12. And so that was a little bit difficult, you know.
And for people maybe outside the New York area, in listening in from some of those 150 countries around the world, Equinox is a athletic gym fitness club.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty high end. It's a couple hundred dollars a month membership. And in the summertime, they do a daytime summer camp program for children of their members.
Yep.
So Tuckerbox had the opportunity to work with, what was it, two Equinoxes?
Two Equinoxes, Upper East Side and Upper West Side locations.
For the summer, and then drop off lunches to the kids who were at Equinox summer camp.
Yes, and we also had a daycare in Brooklyn as well as the third location.
So you were then dropping, so the kids were too young to be picking their own lunches on the app.
Right. So we launched with five fully prepared meals. It's a main and two sides, one sweet and one savory side. And then the meals are all like very kid-centric, so things that they already know and love and recognize, like mac and cheese and pizza, but done in a very healthy and creative way. So like cauliflower crust on the pizza, or quinoa mac and cheese, things like that. Yeah.
And how did they go?
It went great. I mean, we learned a lot, and we did change recipes sort of in real time. Things like if the veggies were too visible, the kids wouldn't eat it. Just noticing things like that. How can we educate kids about what's in their food, but also get them to finish their meals, which is, you know, the main thing any parent really wants to hear is that their kid ate lunch, right, and finished it, and is not coming home starving. So yeah, it was incredible. But the thing with them being a little bit young made it tricky because, well, they're a little bit pickier, and some of the, you know, portioning and things just were a little like too big and weren't really working out for toddler age, you know.
So. Well, it sounds like up until this point, everything is going great.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds very successful as a startup.
Yeah, it felt like a train that just wasn't stopping. You know, I had so many, it just felt like a win every so often, you know, whether it was a pitch or, you know, the app stuff or getting that partnership and stuff like that.
Affirmation of the idea.
Oh, totally.
Affirmation of the product.
Mm-hmm.
But today we're here to talk about the fact that you decided to stop Tuckerbox.
That's right.
So how do you get from successes, consistently successful startup to stop?
Yeah. I mean, to be fully transparent, it was that I could not support the startup any longer financially, and I couldn't support myself in New York, so something has to change, you know.
So it comes down to money.
Totally.
Like so many things do. Everything, unfortunately, many things in this life come down to money, including the life of this radio station. We have to take a quick break to hear from our underwriter. You may or may not know that Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit, and we keep the lights on and the mics hot. 100% of the out of the generosity of our members, underwriters, and grants. So stay with us and find out who the amazing people are who are supporting this episode.
Patina Restaurant Group offers unparalleled service in New York's most iconic locations, including Lincoln Center, Rockefeller Center, and Macy's Herald Square. From meetings and presentations in the glass-walled atrium, to galas in the renovated Palm House, and intimate wedding showers at Yellow Magnolia Cafe, your event will be perfectly imagined and customized at Brooklyn Botanic Garden. You can also enjoy a la carte brunch and lunch at the picturesque Yellow Magnolia Cafe, overlooking Lily Pool Terrace. Chef Rob Newton and Chef de Cuisine Morgan Jarrett offer warm, distinctive cuisine with a focus on local vegetables, grains, and sustainably sourced meats and fish.
Well, if you're just tuning in and you're wondering what the hell you clicked on, this is Tech Bites, the weekly show on the Heritage Radio Network, where we talk about the intersection of food and technology. Do you have a piece of food tech that you love? Do you have an app that you just discovered or maybe invented? Do you want to come on Tech Bites and tell us about it? Reach out, get in touch. You can find us on social media, Tech Bites HRN, on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. You can send us an email, techbites@heritageradionetwork.org. We are very interactive. We would love to hear from you, and who knows, maybe you'll wind up on the radio. Today on the radio, we have Megan Crow, who is the CEO and founder of a company called Tuckerbox. If you want to find out more about Tuckerbox, go to tuckerbox.com. You can also find them on social media at Tuckerbox. Megan is a familiar voice to listeners of Tech Bites. She was on our Women CEO Roundtable last year, episode 99, where we talked to women CEOs and founders about life in the tech space. She's here sharing with us the story about her very successful startup, Tuckerbox. She won competitions, was a part of the best accelerators, raised funds, great feedback, great partnerships, and basically just hit the money wall.
Yeah. Totally.
How hard is it to raise money then? Was it a question of not being able to raise money? Was it a question of being able to get the product and production to a profitable space?
Mm-hmm.
Did you go through the different rounds of funding, or was it just too difficult to find?
So we really needed to raise a seed round. We were raising $500,000, and that would have gave us about 6 months of runway. The difficulty, really, what it came down to was that there wasn't enough traction or proof of concept in the minds of the VCs that we were talking to in the space. There is another part of the story, which is that just the space got crowded for meal delivery. It's a little oversaturated.
So this is you are in the process of building Tuckerbox with the backdrop of Blue Apron.
Right.
And
they went public, yes.
Not successful IPO.
Exactly.
And the headlines of that probably were not helpful.
And also Amazon's acquisition of Whole Foods. And so now you have some big players who could very easily just, do a Tuckerbox on their own, which is what a lot of investors were saying to us.
Yeah. So the space got crowded in the sense of meal delivery.
Mm-hmm.
And so actual meal delivery, Blue Apron IPO, which had a negative kind of headline for people who were investing in the space. Potential meal delivery with the Amazon Whole Foods acquisition, but no actual meal delivery service online yet. Just perhaps a hypothetical glimmer of meal delivery service on the horizon.
Yeah, but that's none frustrating. Yes.
Right, because it's not, resulted in actual meal delivery service yet.
Yeah.
But none of these things are geared towards children. So crowded marketplace, in the sense of maybe the subject crowding in the media and in the industry space in terms of what people are talking about, but none of those things are focused to kids.
That's right. So that totally was so frustrating, just to be like, just talking about how frustrating it is for parents to pack healthy lunch each day and how this is like another chore for mostly moms. Let's be real. Right. And trying to get mostly male VCs to understand that problem and to understand the potential of the children market. But right away they're thinking like, yes, but kids don't have money. So just things like that. Yeah. It's a tough thing to pitch, to be honest. Yeah.
Tough thing to pitch. Although it seemed like whatever pitching you were doing up until this point was working.
Yeah, totally. Because I think audiences, it resonates with people. I mean, everyone remembers the school lunch table, and you remember Michelle Obama's campaign for, a healthier generation. And so it's all very relevant, of course, and people, it tugs on the heartstrings, I think. So, yeah.
So funding was the big issue.
Yeah.
So it just got to the point where you couldn't support the business anymore and you didn't have the funding coming in. So at what point then did you decide to hit the pause button?
Yeah. So it became pretty clear through conversations with my co-founder, Alexander Payne, several, hard, difficult to have conversations where we say, like, where is the line in the sand? How far are we going to go? What's the, kind of cutoff timeline looking like? Because I think we both knew in our heart that, we would have to move on if it, you know, just didn't take off. Ultimately, that's what happened. So, you know, that time came. We got through Christmas and then got back and, you know, had a couple of sit-downs with the team and talked through everything and ultimately just said, you know, there are some things we have to wind down. There's obviously, we have a co-packing facility, so we had a big partnership there. So some difficult conversations, you know, but I mean, everything is like built and sitting there if we want to pick it back up. It's funny, the word failure, because I don't really see it as a failure. There's still a business there, but it's not a business if you can't launch, right? So,
or if it's not functioning or running.
Yeah.
One of the things that we talked about before the show when we were discussing the lifespan of your business thus far, you said something very interesting, which was, when you started Tuckerbox, it was this idea of the app and kids and meal delivery. And at once you got, you know, 2 years into it, you realized you were building two very different types of companies. One that you knew about, mm-hmm. design and app, and one that you knew nothing about, food production.
Yeah, I think what it's kind of more obvious now that I've had time to stop and really look at it and kind of reflect on things. But what I realized is that we're kind of building two companies at the same time, because I was so focused on the tech side and, you know, making a fun, engaging space where kids could play and learn about food and have autonomy over their food choices. So that was really my focus. And Alex was so focused on the food, which is logistically very complicated. And, you know, we had a supply chain and logistics manager. We had the co-packing partnership. We had nutritionist and our executive chef. And so all of that was kind of like a whole other business. And then when you think about the partnership with Equinox, we were delivering food every day. So we were kind of almost like a catering partner. And so
like
that was
food
really
service.
Different.
You right, almost like, became a food service company.
Exactly. Yeah. And I know nothing about, you know, bringing a food item to market. That's not like my background, you know, as a designer. So, yeah, I think in hindsight, it's it's interesting that there's kind of two businesses there. Yeah.
It's also worth noting that you talk about discovering this in hindsight or in the moment where you were able to have a respite from the day-to-day.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's hard to find time and space to evaluate something when you're constantly just moving forward and really busy and working all the time.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
It's become a part of the startup life and the startup story to have get-togethers called Fail Fridays, or things where people talk about, in order to succeed, you have to fail up.
Yep.
And things like that. The startup world is so interesting. It becomes increasingly proscribed and has its own culture and its own path and language for talking about things. And the latest thing is this, you know, Fail Friday, where people would get together and they would talk about when their business, you know, quote, I'm making air quotes with my fingers, you can't see on the radio, you know, failed. And failure is not necessarily so much you know, closing, gone, burned to the ground, not existing anymore. But it's often they call it the pivot because you change direction and you refine and maybe some pieces fall away and some pieces get enhanced. So now that you've had that space to think about it and realize how many different businesses you were actually building and maybe structurally how things would maybe be different, or different advisors or different experts,
sure,
or different team members, would you repackage it and go out again for money?
You know, I've given that a lot of thought. I think that there are pieces that I could be really passionate about repackaging and starting in sort of a different way. one of them being the app itself and just the gamification of food in a really fun and creative way for kids. I'm not really interested in being like a Lunchables competitor where I have a shelf item and, you know, like a bento box, lunchbox.
You don't want to be a consumer product good. A CPG.
Yeah, I have talked with a lot of food founders, you know, as you know, especially like on the consulting side, I work with a lot of food founders. And it's really difficult and it's extremely competitive, you know, to get like an item in Whole Foods and have it take off. But I'm also just not super passionate about having food that's shelf stable. The whole thing was about farm fresh lunch boxes delivered, right? So without that piece, I can't see myself getting like really passionate about it.
Well, when I say repackage it, I almost meant repackaging it as multiple businesses under one roof.
Sure. I mean, I see what you're saying, like from a management standpoint.
From a management standpoint, mm-hmm. having a clearer idea. Mm-hmm. And maybe if you are packaging, you know, the fresh meals, maybe you could make one-stop deliveries to different groups or small daycares or something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually really enjoyed doing the summer camp thing and have considered, you know, what if the business was just that? I mean, it's a huge opportunity because so many summer camps have horrible food. You know, before we partnered with Equinox, they had, you know, just various catering services, but they were paying like $18 a meal. And sometimes it was things like fried chicken and things like that. So that's crazy.
Is fried chicken bad?
Well, I don't know if it's bad, but it's not great to feed your kids, you know, every single day.
Every single day, for sure.
Yeah, every once in a while. And of course, it's
I feel delicious. Like fried chicken would be better than a nugget.
Yeah.
I like a good piece of fried chicken every now and again.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Chicken and waffles.
Yes. So next steps, you're not quite sure what next steps are.
Well, right now I'm looking to join another startup. So I'm interviewing
still
around.
Still got the startup in your blood though. Still want to be in the entrepreneur startup zone.
It's who I am now, you know. So I can't imagine going back and working on, you know, Fortune 500 brands, sure. But I just don't think that I would feel fulfilled, you know. It's really who I am now. So, yeah.
Interesting. So you made the big pivot on a personal level.
Totally, yeah. I'm really excited about it, you know. About bringing everything that I learned, that energy, to a team and being able to focus on design again. So I'm looking to do product design, like be a product design lead somewhere.
Okay. Well, Megan's looking to be a product design lead. There you have it. If that sounds like something you're interested in, go get in touch with her at Tuckerbox somewhere. Awesome. On social media. She's easy to find. I want to thank her, though, for coming out and sharing her story. It's not always an easy thing to talk about, but increasingly it's a thing that we do talk about, we encourage people to talk about, and we even, I mean, I do think to, you know, voice your words from the earlier show, you know, celebration of failure. Do you think you're celebrating this failure?
I think I'm working through it. Like I said, I feel excited, about the next chapter. But you know, it's my baby too. So it's not the easiest thing in the world. There are good times and bad times, I guess.
And do you feel like it's a pause versus a stop?
I do think it's a pause.
Is that why we call it a pivot?
Yeah. Right. Change of direction.
Exactly. Versus a hard stop.
Yes, for sure. Thanks.
Well, you'll have to keep us posted. You never know. Something could happen. You could meet somebody. You could, you know, find yourself in a startup where this would nestle in very nicely. Or, you know, it's interesting that none of the meal delivery services really do have anything that focuses towards young people. in any way, shape, or form. They all focus primarily on lifestyle and food type.
Yep.
So that's interesting. We could do a whole show on delivery, meal delivery. And we never have. And the reason is I can't figure out how to turn the corner on the environmental piece.
I hear you. Yeah, that's a huge challenge. Huge.
And we tend to like to give guests a positive experience when they come on the show.
Yeah.
And perhaps if we had meal delivery services on and it turned into an environmental show, that might not be fun for the guest.
No.
And we want guests to have a good time.
Awesome.
So, Megan, thank you for coming on Tech Bites. Tech Bites is hosted and produced by me. I'm Jennifer Leuzzi. It is on every Thursday morning at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on heritageradionetwork.org. If you want to take it with you, subscribe to it. Find us on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Our engineer, David Tatasciore, is going to take us out of the show with our amazing theme song, Nomada CPU, created by the one, the only, DJ Uptown Nico. If you like him, check him out on SoundCloud and look for him on social media because he often plays in New York City and parts on the East Coast. I'm Jennifer Leuzzi, and this is Tech Bites.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey everybody, I'm Nick Latham.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.